We're still morning, right? Good morning. Anyway, well, y'all fit a lot in a little bit of time. So I'm going to respect the fact that what I do is I'm going to almost speak to you like teenagers, in the sense that what happens is when I speak to teens, and it's kind of like this circle that as soon as I start talking, it starts getting closing just like this, and I try to get a lot of words in before it closes altogether, because I know the spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. And wow, those cream puff, like the pat a shoe with the cream and the chocolate ganache on the top, well done. Well done. I'm sure everything was good. That's all I had. But anyway, I really enjoyed it, and I just appreciate it. Like I said, I appreciate the opportunity. I love the Lord, and I love to be able to do His work. And so, as you've just gone through this week, and I know that much prayer and different things. And let me echo what Brother Andrew just said. Andrew, right? Yep. Sorry. Should have been confident. Andrew. Yeah. Andrew, what he just said about as far as if you know someone who's lost, and if you do, please introduce me to them. I would love to meet them and different things. You know, everybody has their part. You know, and if this just the part for them to get a little water on the seed, to hear the truth, if God's done, then let it be so. So anyway, with all that being said, this morning, I plan by the grace of God to be brief, and let me just say another word real quick about Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Look, I know we're fighting the world, we're fighting the flesh, we got the devil. Everybody has a bazillion things going on. We're the busiest, like we have the most conveniences, and yet the most busiest people ever, right? And with that being the case, and it's kind of a weird dynamic. However, I want to make sure that I let you know concerning this upcoming week, though, that definitely prayerfully we'll be conscious of time. I understand kids can school, different things like that, and so I know we're fighting the world, flesh, the devil. Not trying to fight your schedule either, but I just want to make sure that I'm, you know, basically I'm just trying to say in a weird way that I'm not just going to be preaching all night long, right? So get that. And then on the other side too, I do pray to, you know, as we go through this time though, this week and the evenings especially, there's so many things to address, like as far as in our hearts, and I hope to be an encouragement, especially as it relates to like mental health, as it pertains to our hearts and our relationship to others. So many things this week, and so I hope to be able to talk about some of those things as the Lord leads. You said, Adrian, do you know what you're speaking on yet? I don't, actually. I prayerfully walk day by day, man, you know, and that's just as the Lord leads, and I study. You say, what message are you working on? I'm working on 35 at the time, at this moment. And why does that mean? Because I need to be ready when he says ready. Okay? To go. So with that being said, just so many different things, but we look forward to it this week. This time, Ruth chapter number 1 is where we're going to be, to one of my favorite characters in all the Bible, Ruth chapter number 1. I'm not necessarily going to preach the book. I'm going to make an observations about a couple of things and see one thing that I hope will be true this week inside of our hearts. We talk about our heart being Adam's stone. Really, my thrust this morning was going to be, man, walk out of here by grace of God, live by faith, let that be in our heart. But let me just echo one little exclamation point behind that truth, and then we'll call it a day. The most memorable services I have ever been into are services that usually involve teenagers. I enjoy preaching to teens. It's where I started. Actually, when I was younger, I guess you could say, I preached to teenagers because by default I was young, and so that's who I preached to. But as I got older, I found I still had a heart to preach to kids and to preach to teens on their, like, specifically to them. I really find that there's been a whole lot of decisions and the strongest service has been, and I've tried to find the parallels of why that is. Number one, I think the parallel is, number one, it's just younger, tender hearts. It's just a reality. We get old. We get crusty. it's just sometimes the way it goes, right? And so a lot of times there's fewer distractions. And then number two, though, I made this observation too, that the reason that I find that those are the strong services, because when a person goes to camp or something, you can remove distractions in their life to be able to focus in on preaching. Like the spiritual emphasis, Revival Week, is like the closest thing we've got. But the thing is, we still can't remove distractions, right? There's still a good number of distractions that are in our life. The closest thing I've ever seen for adults having that kind of distraction-free zone is really a missions trip. Because your phone won't work. You're not going to have service. You have planned to be away. So that being said, it's easier to be able to focus in on spiritual things when you can neglect or just get rid of so many distractions. So I would say that's another setting aside, a set apart for a strong teen service. And then the last observation that I made was this, and I think this is what I'm going to speak to here during this time, is that during teen services, there's always a call for a very specific decision. Like, please don't take this as, you know, boosting myself up, please. But parents typically like me to preach to their teenagers. And I'll tell you why. They'll come to me before the bus leaves out, and they know I'm the speaker, and I'm getting ready to get in my car or whatever with my family and stuff. They'll come, hey, brother, come here for a sec. Now my kid's going to that week of camp. Now you make sure to let them have it now. Don't you hold back, Adrian, you know. Make sure you preach it, right? And then when it comes to the adults, they're like, don't get crazy up in here, you know. But however, they want me to go to their kids, and they want me to tell. Because we like it when it's like the decision is very specific. We're going to make a vow of purity unto God. This is the plan. We're going to go. Then here's what adults want too. They want the teens afterwards to take their decision and come in from the church and tell the church what the decision that was made as well. I'm not against that, but I'm just going to flip this around. Is that somehow after teenage years and flipping a tassel over our head and getting into the adult zone, there has been a new brand of decision making that has taken over. We typically think of it in a good-bad binary in the sense of only good decisions and I make bad decisions. However, we have introduced this new version of decisions, which is this: no decisions. We just don't make any decisions. When do we walk out of a service and put a flag in the ground and say, God spoke to me about this, and by his strength and his help, I'm going to follow through, so much so, I'm going to go to my family, I'm going to go to people I care about, and I'm going to tell them the decision that I made. And I am so confident and believe in this decision that I'm going to do it. Well, what's wrong with getting in front of the church body, the ones who you love, and say, God has spoken to my heart about this, and I haven't done this, but by his grace and his strength and his help, I plan to do thus and such. What I'm saying is we have a new brand of bad decision-making called no decisions. You still make it? You know, I think it's addressed here in Ruth. You know, first, let's get the background. Okay, like I said, I just don't like just reading. Let's understand. This is the time of the judges. About after Samson time frame is where we're at. We're taking our microscope and kind of looking in on one family. Obviously, Elimelech and Naomi and their two kids, Mahlon, Chilion, however you pronounce their names. Anyway, but you have their families that are here. Now, we can judge them all day. They left Israel during a famine to go to Moab. Bro, I mean, look, I just want to make sure I'm the defense attorney of understanding the famines. You've seen famines in Israel, right? Famines in Israel. Remember the one in Samaria where they're eating donkey's heads? Mothers were walking around bartering whether whose child they're going to eat that day. I'm just pointing out to you that let's not think that these are some, Elimelech was some lightweight that just couldn't handle a little testing and trials, and so he deserts at the first given time. Look, I'm not saying possibly he should have left. I'm just pointing out that let's not just throw the guy under the bus. So Elimelech, him and his family, Naomi, Mahlon, they leave. Now, it says they left out full. Left out full and came back empty. It's possible that they were loaded. they had land. They had property. So they pretty much sold everything they had, headed out. So as they did, you find that Mahlon Kilion found two girls, Ruth and Orpah, Moabite women, and they married them. Well, now you have Naomi. Naomi's here, and Naomi, husband dies, Elimelech. Then, tragically, both of her sons die. This is a horrible situation. The first thing we want to do is we're going to look at the three characters in this story. We're going to look at Naomi, Ruth, and Orpah. And then I'm going to make one point after we just look at these people to understand the context, what's going on. Ruth chapter number 1, let's read here, verse 11. The Bible says this, and Naomi said, turn again, my daughters, and why will you go with me? Are there yet any more sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Turn again, my daughters, go your way, for I am too old to have an husband. If I should say I have a husband also tonight and should also bear sons, would you tarry for them till they are grown? Would you stay for them from having husbands? Nay, my daughters, for agree with me much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. And they lifted up their voice and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave unto her. And she said, behold, thy sister-in-law is gone back unto her people and unto her gods. Returned thou after the sister-in-law. And Ruth said, entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go. Where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people and thy God, my God. But first off, let's look at this. We first see it. The first character in this story is discouraged Naomi. Now understand, Naomi is very discouraged. And just, I want to point out the bad, but let me also point out the defense attorney side of me as well. And that is, number one, Naomi gives terrible advice. Terrible. She looks at her two daughters-in-law and says to them, I know you just lost your husbands. I want you to go back to your people and to your gods. She knows that they serve the wrong gods. Like, they don't serve the Jehovah. So she's telling them, go back. Now, again, on this side, Naomi has experienced great loss in her life. She just lost her husband, okay? Then, even a word that we don't even have in English until recently, where, you know, a person who loses a father, you know, or a mother, orphan, so basically we have words for different tragic things that happen, but we don't even really have a word for a parent that loses a child, like a word that just kind of describes it in just one. And recently I've heard this word, I don't know if how popular it's become, but beloma, which means it describes a person that loses a child, because beloma means this, it's against the natural order. Like, it wasn't supposed to happen like that. This wasn't part of the plan. I'm supposed to watch them grow up, right? And she lost both of them. Like, everything she knew about human being, like, that was her crew, are all dead. So again, I'm just pointing out, Naomi's coming from a terrible spot. She's giving terrible advice, but I'm not just going to take this and paint this entire story and just keep kicking Naomi down. She's not doing right. She's giving terrible advice. However, we understand the discouraged position this woman is. Okay. Now, character number two, Orpah. All right? So we have Orpah. So number one, we have discouraged Naomi, indecisive Orpah. So here we got the three ladies are together. This is the picture. So the three ladies are together. Naomi makes the announcement. You need to go back to your people and to your gods. No one really says anything. They just kind of start talking, and then there's a gap in between these verses here where they kind of gather and they cry, and then they kind of sniff up like, for real now, you guys got to go back to your people. Have you done that before where you're trying to say goodbye to somebody, and then it's like on the third time, maybe you're actually walking out the door, you know what I mean? This is what's happening. It's like they don't want to say goodbye. It's not like they just want to go, but they keep on trying. Bye. No, cry more. Oh, no. So finally, you see this. You don't hear anything else from Orpah. Look, there's a gap that's here from verses 14 and 15. So you have Naomi. They lifted the voice, wept again. Orpah kissed her, and Ruth clave unto her. Then verse 15. No more talk about Orpah. Ruth, she's only talking to Ruth now. And she's talking to Ruth in past tense and saying, all right, your sister's already gone. Now it's time for you to go. So what you find is Orpah brands this new horrible decision-making, which is this. She never says anything disrespectful about the God of Israel. She doesn't say, I don't want to be part of that. I'm going to do my own thing. No, she doesn't disrespect. She just doesn't make a decision at all. And by making no decision, somebody else makes the decision for her, which is discouraged Naomi makes the decision for her. And so you find a person who makes a decision to go and reject the one true God over here, and go back to her gods because of the fact of not being willing to make a choice and say what she's willing to do. So the first character is discouraged Naomi. Then we have indecisive Ruth. But then also you have, I'm sorry, I said indecisive Orpah. And number three is you have decisive Ruth. Now, it's interesting because in verse 16, Ruth says, entreat me not to leave thee, nor to turn following after thee. For where thou goest, I will go. Where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God my God. Great day in the morning. Where thou diest, I will die, and there will I be buried. This woman, this sounds like marriage vows, don't they? I mean, listen to this girl. She's like, she's using everything possible in her language to convey. Girl, I ain't going nowhere. I'm staying with you. No, when you find this here in this kind of vocabulary, the word entreat me not is a word picture of like rain hitting a building. So basically what she's saying is this. The word, we don't use this word picture, obviously, but imagine rain going on top of a building, going pat, 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 pat on top of a building. What she's saying is entreat me not. Stop asking me and 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 asking me not to come. Stop it. She's saying, I'm going to come with you. You can keep on going. You can word it differently. We can cry more. You can do whatever you're going to do. But I am staying with you. Your God will be my God. The girl made a choice. Here is why I love Ruth. You know, Ruth is so interesting in the Bible because my favorite Bible character probably is Abishai. But after Abishai, Ruth's really up there because of the fact I can relate so much to Ruth. Here, in this sense, okay? Like, some people are like, who's your favorite Bible character? Like, I love Paul. You know, like, Paul, man, he's a great, right? How are you going to top that? But the thing about Paul is, like, I don't really relate to Paul. Paul was a genius, okay? Like he really was a master. Pharisee of Pharisees. I mean, this guy was brilliant mind. You know, because sometimes I'd be talking to pastors and stuff, and, just like Pastor Boyce, you know? Like, before, what were you doing before, you know, Lord called to preach? You know, auto mechanic, owned a business, and all different things like that. And like, Adrian, what were you doing before you were preaching? Playing Mario. <You know? laughs> I really look at it. Like, people have all these incredible gifts and talents. Like, bro, I'm doing good if I can change your oil. And I'm not even comfortable with it, you know? But I got the concept, put some YouTube in front of me, and maybe we can do this, right? It's really, I really don't. Like, sometimes I'm like, man, did I ride the short bus to school? Not, no. You know, I think to myself, like, you know, I'm talking to these pastors who used to work for NASA, and they're like, yeah, before the Lord called me to preach, I had like 15 scholarships to go different places. Yeah. Me, yeah, right. I had to beg them in Pensacola, will you take me? You know? And so, like, Ruth is, I find such comfort in Ruth. Why? Because she's just like me. There's nothing super amazing about Ruth. Like, when you talk about Esther, well, good night, the girl's drop dead gorgeous, man. Like, she was so gorgeous. I mean, the king, like, my goodness, you know? Like, so obviously, she has something going for her. You talk about all these other characters. You know, David, he was a warrior. Then on the side, he can play music. I can't stand people like that. Like, it's like, oh, I can play the piano as well as fix your car, you know? And but Ruth is just a person. She's just plain. There's nothing amazingly talented about Ruth, and it gives hope to me that somebody who's just somebody just made a choice. She just made a choice. I'm sticking with you. I'm not gonna leave you. I'm gonna serve your God. It doesn't take a genius to make a choice and love God and serve Him. It doesn't take giftedness just pouring out that everyone's just gushing over. You find then you have a decisive Ruth, and I put some notes because it was interesting. I was at a missions conference years ago, and I used to work in the prison ministry, right? I used to work at Rock of Ages Prison Ministry, and so I used to be a missionary with them. And I was raising support at the time, and I was sitting around a table with a bunch of missionaries who were at a missions conference, and then the pastor walked away. And then what missionaries do when the pastor walks away, we start asking questions that the pastor's not going to hear, right? And so one of the questions was like, who's the most likely person to get support at this church, right? And so, like, we're sitting around talking and stuff, and one of the guys brought it up. I was like, I don't care. We'll kick it around. This is the thought. And actually, at this missions conference, we all pointed at one guy. This guy, he's a missionary to Argentina. The reason why we all point to that guy is because, man, you looked at that guy. And it was Argentina. You ask him, hey, how you doing? Man, I'm great, but the weather in Argentina is actually 67 degrees right now, you know? It's like, it just was in him. Like you could just, everything about his persona was that feel. You know why it's so interesting? Because in Ruth chapter number 1, in verse number 18, it says this. This is Naomi. When she, Naomi, saw that she, Ruth, was steadfastly minded to go with her. You know what the Bible says? It wasn't that speech that soon as Naomi heard this, wow, I'm convinced. That was amazing performance. Man, that was, no, she saw. That girl ain't going nowhere. I cannot convince. She is going to serve the true God. It could be seen. Her choice wasn't just a haphazard, well, I guess I should. I hate, because I'm very big on getting baptized and know what you're doing, but let's get baptized, get wet, get wearing my swimsuit. No. I made a choice that this meant something to her. All right, those are three characters. One point, I'm done.
And that is this.
Making memorable decisions should be in the DNA of every Christian. Making memorable decisions should be in the DNA of every Christian. I remember thinking to myself, after I got out of college and I got married, I started single, traveling and stuff, And I remember when I first started traveling after I got married, I remember just laying back thinking to myself, I'm done with college, I know my career choice, and now I'm married. No more big decisions in my life. I'm glad all those are behind me now, you know. And every adult in the building knows how foolish. decisions have to be made at every single turn inside of my life. And here's the crazy thing that I'm noticing now. I'm not super old, but I'm old enough. I'm 36. If you've been doing math trying to figure out how old I'm 36, all right. So, well, almost 37. But anyway, so I'm 36. But we got, as you go through this week, here's what I've been noticing now at this age. Is every time I get used to one stage of life, it changes. You know what I'm saying? Like, I get used to knowing, like, oh, I know we got our system. We got our thing with the kids. We know how to get them in the car, go to a restaurant. And now, what you talking about now? Oh, y'all don't like watching Dora anymore. Well, excuse me. I used to just pop on Dora, walk out, and walk away, you know? Like, what I'm saying is, every time I get used to one, it totally changes up on me. So what you find out now is that decisions have to be made all the time to continue down this path that we are going to, meaning that I must draw closer and closer unto God to know exactly what he wants from me. See, here's the thought and the challenge. And again, like I said, I'm trying to be respectful. Here's the danger. Decisions should be part of the DNA of a Christian. But let me show you the exact opposite of what takes place if this were to happen. After being saved for a long time and hearing many messages, if some of you have been in church for a long time, and so therefore you've probably heard much, much preaching in your time. Instead of preaching and teaching from the Bible, sometimes in our life, being somewhere I make a decision and it brings me to a decision and stuff, sometimes preaching can sometimes become really a subtle form of entertainment. It really can. Meaning this, like, almost like hand out the cards, here we go. After you're done preaching, hey, preacher, I give that a six today. You did pretty good today, preacher. I give you a 9. You gave a little word there. I got that. Appreciate that. You know, sometimes it becomes more just a thing because we got to do the thing anyway of preaching. We got to listen to preaching anyway. And since we got to listen to preaching anyway, let's just kind of rate it as if it's just entertainment. Here's the challenge is when the Word of God is open, we're pricked in our heart of decision, we just don't walk away and say, boy, that was good. We're not going to change anything, but boy, that was good. No. God would impress upon my heart. So here's the, when's the last time, what was it last revival that God spoke to your heart about, and did you grab a flag and put it in the ground, so to speak, of anything? So the result is this, is that I can give you a resume that I've been in church for the past 15 years, but I can't tell you one decision I've made in the past 15 years. I can tell you I've attended every service at the revival for the past however many years, but I can't tell you what God's done. Your spouse couldn't tell you any decision you've made. Your kids couldn't tell any decision. You never told anybody anything that God's spoken to you about. God didn't even know, for crying out loud. What I'm just begging is, no matter how seemingly small, no matter how seemingly insignificant, just make a decision about something. It is better than just having a notebook full of notes. Just having one thought in your heart that God has spoken to you. The DNA of every Christian should be making memorable decisions. Let me pray together. Father in heaven, thank you for this time, Lord. I thank you for this, Lord, being able to a very concentrated view, Lord, at this point in these services to look into your word. I pray, Lord, that during this time, Lord, that we wouldn't just view preaching as just, that's cool, that's entertaining. But, Lord, preaching is changing us. God, I pray that you do that this week as we dedicate every portion of this week to you, that you would allow, Lord, those who may not know you to, Lord, come under the preaching and understanding of what your word is, and, Lord, and and their need for Christ, but not just so hopeful that others make decisions. I pray, Lord, that we as your people will put some flags in the ground. Or better yet, Lord, I pray for just a flag in the ground for this week of something that God will speak to us about, or that we could definitely boldly let someone know this is what God is working with me upon. Pray that you just use your word inside of our life, and we pray about whatever decision that is. For in Christ's name, we certainly pray it all. We'll keep our heads bowed, eyes closed.